If you're looking for one more good summer read, we have a suggestion just out in paperback. It's Gail Caldwell's Memoir of Friendship, Let's Take the Long Way Home. In 1996, Gail Caldwell was an acclaimed book critic for the Boston Globe, who'd go on to win the Pulitzer. Her friend, Caroline Knapp, was a popular columnist for the Boston Phoenix, who'd write two best-selling memoirs, Drinking, A Love Story, and Pack of Two, about her dog. Both women loved their dogs ferociously. Both had stared down alcoholism. Both coveted the solitary life of a writer and were between relationships with men. While Gail swam, Caroline rowed, and a lot of women of a certain age and aspiration would have wanted to be friends with either of them, but lucky them, they found each other.
The friendship must have announced its depth by its obvious affection, but also by our similarities, muted or apparent. That our life stories had wound their way toward each other on corresponding paths was part of the early connection. Finding Caroline was like placing a personal ad for an imaginary friend, then having her show up at your door funnier and better than you had conceived. Apart, we had each been frightened drunks and aspiring writers and dog lovers. Together, we became a small corporation.
But it wasn't to last. Caroline Knapp died of lung cancer in 2002 at the age of 42. Gail Caldwell writes about her in the book Let's Take the Long Way Home, A Memoir of Friendship. We spoke when it was first published. You say people mistook you for sisters, for lovers. You were neither. You were friends. Just what did that mean?
I think I said somewhere that writing about us was like trying to capture air, because so much of it was this sort of blissful routine of an ordinary life. We walked, we talked. We talked about the dogs, we walked the dogs. We went home and called each other on the phone and walked some more.
In fact, the title of the book, Let's Take the Long Way Home, came from something Caroline used to say to you, you know, let's take the long way home so we can talk more.
Yeah, we used to go to the woods for hours, and we'd get in the car and she would look at me and go, let's take the long way home, because we couldn't bear to stop whatever we were doing.
Yeah.
You know, the things that connected us, in fact, as our friendship unfolded and became more intimate and more intense, we realized that we had these uncanny parallels that had nothing to do with our upbringing or our histories, but everything to do with our sensibility.
And what about it was uniquely female? At one point, another friend says something about female friendships. If guys found out, we shouldn't let them find out what this
I
is.
I love that line. Yes, my friend Louise, I said, men don't really understand women's friendships, do they? And she said, oh, no, and we must never tell them.
Tell them what?
Well, you know, a friend actually said to me, to my surprise, that she thought this was a gender-free relationship. I think because of the, a lot of what we did was about sports and being outside and competing with each other, which I think women have been taught not to do from the before they can talk. And I think we wanted to and did defy a lot of gender stereotypes. But I also think that the emotionality and straightforward intimacy between us, at least in my experience, is much more reliably female than male.
Well, and you share the writing life, her writing, you know, as a book critic. We have some of it right now. I mean, just, if this is from Drinking, A Love Story. A love story, yes, this is a love story. It's about passion, sensual pleasure, deep pulls, lust, fears, yearning hungers. As you write, you know, before her, writing about drinking had been the men's arena.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I read Drinking, A Love Story, we were not yet friends. I knew her. I had met her, but our friendship hadn't begun. What I remember reading that in reading the book was thinking, oh my God, this is the first time a woman has told the truth about what it's like to be a high-functioning alcoholic. And in fact, I mean, Caroline was fearless in front of a keyboard. I was laughing the other day and saying to a friend, she was the shyest person in a crowd of three or more. She was unbelievably shy, but you put her in front of a keyboard and she was completely courageous and would walk toward the fire. So I had always admired that about her. We were very different in terms of what we wrote about and I think the way we approached it. And I think we learned a lot from each other for that reason.
She was also one of the first to write about a love affair with a dog, which, you know, that now that's sort of become a genre, you know, but her Pack of Two was one of the first. So the dogs.
The dogs. And I have to say, my former beautiful Clementine, who was my great canine love is given the nom de plume of Oakley in Caroline's Pack of Two.
Yeah.
So we appeared under different names, which still amuses me.
Well, Clementine, your dog, Lucille, hers,
mm-hmm.
they're sort of the silent Greek chorus here. What did they do for each other?
Sometimes not so silent.
Yeah, right.
They were the glue in a whole lot of ways. I mean, yes, that's a lovely way to see it. We both had puppies at the same time, and I think that we had that new mom in the park sensibility. We reached toward each other because we understood what the other one was going through. And it was so enriching and rewarding, it being the canine experience for each of us, that when we recognized that in the other, we went from being these parallel dyads of women with their dogs to a pack of four.
You know, it occurs as we read, and you even acknowledge it at one point, that what you're writing about is a form of family that many people will be familiar with. It's made up of friends,
mm-hmm.
former boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Caroline, before she dies, marries her longtime
mm-hmm.
boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the nuclear family that we think of,
mm-hmm.
but still, you know, people have each other's house keys and emergency numbers.
Right, right. Well, I think that family, nuclear families have become so atomized in the last generation. And also, Caroline and I neither had children, neither had married, though she was, in fact, involved the majority of the time with the man she would later marry.
Morelli.
And I think that this is probably, if you're lucky, more common than we give it credibility for, certainly, which is that we choose the people in the inner circle who we depend upon emotionally and then at a certain point in life logistically. I mean, Caroline and I used to laugh for years that I would say, oh my God, I forgot to get married, or I forgot this. And I'd say, what am I going to do when I'm old and I can't? And whatever it was, Caroline would say, don't worry, I'm going to make you soup. And I would laugh and say, but you can't cook. But she was 9 years the younger, and so we had this idea that we always did have each other's back.
Well, we're not going to give away the ending, because I will sob like I did when I got to it. But what do you say to people who have lost a best friend, two or four-footed?
Oh, God. I think I've spent a lot of years learning what not to say. Or rather, that there are gestures and silences that can be as meaningful as anything that I might say. I feel humbled by grief and the power and the length of it. I can say this many years later, I feel honored to have loved somebody enough to have my heart broken. I think it takes a lifetime to be able to figure that out and to bear it.
Book critic and memoirist Gail Caldwell writes about her friendship with the late author Caroline Knapp in Gail's book, Let's Take the Long Way Home, A Memoir of Friendship. Gail, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. I'm so glad to be here.